Good morning. Our case this morning is United States against Contreras. Counsel for the defense, you may proceed.
Chief Judge Efron, members of this honorable court, may it please the court. My name is Captain Philip Corman, and along with Major Shannon Bennett, I represent the appellant in this case, Senior Airman Gabriel Contreras. The issue in this case is whether Article 134, Indecent Acts with Another, is a purely military offense for purposes of Article 130, housebreaking. Appellant was convicted of housebreaking for entering into Airman Swigger's dorm room to engage in consensual activity with her in the presence of a third airman. The manual for court martials requires that housebreaking, that for the offense of housebreaking, an accused must enter with the intent to commit a criminal offense. The manual defines a criminal offense as any act or omission which is punishable by a court martial, except an act or omission constituting a purely military offense. This court in Conlow recently upheld that limitation when it set aside an Article 133 offense as a purely military offense, housebreaking offense, but the underlying basis was an Article 133 offense because it was a purely military offense.
Do you know what the reason for that exclusion is? For the except if it's a purely military offense?
Your Honor,
what's the reason for that?
It appears that, Your Honor, I really don't know. There's no commentary with the MCM that explains that there's really no clear definition. The history of this particular manual provision dates back 80 years and actually going back to the 1928 MCM.
Can you think of a practical reason for it?
Yes, Your Honor. It would seem to be almost unfair for an individual to be prosecuted for entering an area where the offense that's going to be committed impacts the primarily the good order and discipline and is military in nature, as opposed to a civilian offense, which has been clear and is common in society.
And why would that be unfair?
Because, Your Honor, it's got, in this case, it seems like it's almost overkill for the accused to face a conviction, especially if it's a unique offense to the military itself.
That language isn't part of the statute, is it?
No, Your Honor, it's not. But in Zachary, this court recognized the authority of the president to define the elements and gives the president leeway for Article 134 offenses in particular.
Does the president have authority to insert a substantive term in a statute that Congress didn't see fit to insert into it? That's a substantive limitation. That's substantive criminal law, isn't it?
Yes, Your Honor, and in the Ellis v. Jacob, this court recognized that the president wasn't given that authority, but in Conliff, this court recognized that restriction.
But that wasn't an issue in Conliff.
That wasn't.
The validity of that restriction, of that exception, that wasn't litigated in Conliff.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I thought it was. But going back to Zachary, there's language in Zachary that recognizes that in cases of Article 134.
But we're talking about the housebreaking statute here, the limitation on the housebreaking statute.
Yes, Your Honor. I see.
You've got two levels going on here. You have the housebreaking statute, and then you have the underlying offense that he was alleged to have had the intent to commit.
Yes, Your Honor.
So you need to start with the housebreaking statute.
Right.
You've said that he couldn't have been convicted of that because of a limitation that's not in the statute, but rather is in the commentary.
Right. Yes, Your Honor. And again, this court does recognize the president does have authority, especially when it comes to the elements in the NCM.
Counsel, was the purely military offense language in the manual for courts martial prior to adoption of the UCMJ?
Yes, Your Honor, it was.
And Congress was aware of that in any respect? Would Congress have been aware of that at the time?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is there anything in the legislative history that suggests that Congress, in setting forth the offense of housebreaking, wanted to change that aspect of military practice?
No, Your Honor.
Do Do you happen to know if that language was inserted before, what was still the case that in order for a offense to be tried at a court-martial, it had to first be deemed to be a military offense for the military to have jurisdiction?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that question. I know that now it's based on, because of Solario, it's an individual, it's jurisdiction is based on their status as a military member.
And prior to Solario, it was based on?
On whether the offense had a military nexus, I believe.
Well, and prior to O'Callaghan, it was based on status.
Yes, Your Honor.
And including when this was stuck in.
Yes, Your Honor.
Under the Articles of War.
Yes, Your Honor.
Right.
So in 1928, when the manual was adopted, was there a requirement that the offense have a military nexus? In a general matter, the offense of housebreaking, did it have to have a military nexus?
I don't know the answer to that. I'm assuming it did.
Why? What case stood for the proposition that a person couldn't be prosecuted for housebreaking without a military nexus?
Your Honor, I don't know the case.
Are you prepared to brief Roman law today?
No, no, no.
Okay. Let's pretend that piece of the manual applies, as the parties seem to have argued in their briefs. What is the offense which is the related offense in the Article 132 charge? What's the offense that's at issue?
The offense at issue in this case is Article 134, indecent acts with another.
Indecent acts with another, and then under charge 4, he was charged with two specs of indecent acts, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And which indecent act was he convicted of?
He was actually charged with indecent assault. He was acquitted of that, but he was in charge with one specification of indecent act, which he pled guilty to.
Okay, and the indecent act in question was sticking his finger in a private part while in the presence of another person, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So is that the offense which is either purely a military offense or not, in your view?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so is it fair to say that, at least as you see this case, the question is sticking your finger in somebody else's private part while in the presence of another person a purely military offense?
Yes, Your Honor.
Why is that a purely military offense?
It's a purely military offense.
That sounds like something that's charged every day in civil practice.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, in Article 133 in the Collins decision, the court looked at a case where the underlying offense was surreptitious videotaping, and the court said that the underlying offense was the impact of that act on that individual's status as a cadet. In this particular case, while the underlying act is an Article 134 indecent act, the gravamen of the offense, because it's a purely consensual offense, would have been the impact on Cooper and discipline in the military.
I actually thought that in Conley that we didn't look at the underlying offense. We looked at the charged offense, the conduct unbecoming, not the underlying, the actus reus that underlay or underlie the conduct unbecoming.
Yes, Your Honor. That was
why wouldn't we do the same thing here? Instead of looking at the underlying act, look at the
total offense.
The Article 1, the fact that it's an Article 134 offense.
Yes, Your Honor. Maybe it wasn't clear. That's what I intended to say. Is we're looking at the Article 134 offense.
So why isn't an Article 134 offense clause 1 or 2 a purely military offense?
For two separate reasons. The first one is that it has, by its own terms, it requires proof that the underlying conduct has an impact that is unique to the military. Conduct prejudicial to good order and discipline, and conduct that is discrediting to the military. And that's a unique aspect of Article 134, Clause 1 and 2 offense. Similarly to a Clause 133 offense, where there's a requirement that the underlying act have an impact on the individual status as an officer or cadet or midshipman.
That's for you, the hinge of the argument is whether one looks to the elements of the offense or the act or omission.
Yes, Your Honor.
Deciding whether it's purely military.
Yes, Your Honor. That's the first basis.
Because you would agree that the act in this case is placing the finger where it doesn't belong with someone else watching.
Yes, Your Honor.
And so in order for you to prevail, this is a question, not a statement. In order for you to prevail, you need to engage the elements and not just the act.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. Particularly with the focus on the military unique aspects of it.
So, on the one hand, if we decide that you, putting aside the question as to what part of this manual applies or not or whatever, But if we decide that that provision in the manual is applicable, you win if we decide that you judge it based on elements, and you lose if we decide it based on the act itself without reference to the elements.
Yes, sir. There's two bases. The first basis is the element test. The second basis is that the evidence is insufficient to show that this underlying act of consensual sexual activity in the presence of a third party in a private area is generally denounced by civilian justice system. That's the second basis, that why it's a purely military offense.
What's the relevance of whether it's generally denounced by the civilian justice system?
Because it would show this is a uniquely, a purely military offense because it's only prosecuted in the military.
Well, that you can say that about every enumerated offense. Doesn't that prove too much? They're all only prosecuted in the military. They're all only triable by court-martial.
Yes, Your Honor, but the underlying...
Where does that get you?
The underlying conduct itself, the evidence is insufficient to show that this underlying conduct is prosecuted outside of the military.
Do you mean is prosecuted, or do you mean is violative of law?
Actually, I mean both, Your Honor.
I mean, is the government required to show that X conduct is unlawful in 26 states, or are they required just to or you seem to be saying they're actually required to show that there's been 347 prosecutions,
Your Honor,
for that actual conduct?
Whether it's generally denounced by statute in a particular state and actually enforced. Because denounced would imply that it's actually maintained. There might be statutes on the books that have never been enforced in the last 60 years, and their denouncement may be rather hollow.
What does generally denounced mean? I mean, that seems like kind of a nebulous term.
Yes, Your Honor. It would seem, as Judge Baker indicated, the majority of the states would prohibit the activity and enforce that prohibition.
So if someone, you know, if one over a majority has a provision like that, is generally denounced?
Your Honor, I hesitate to put a numerical value. That's for you to determine, but certainly it is a majority at that point.
Okay.
Or what federal statute will do?
One federal statute that's generally applicable.
Why does it need to be generally applicable? But looking at the offenses that are listed in Article 134, it could be characterized in various ways, but one way to characterize it would be those offenses that are unique to the military that cannot be prosecuted in civilian society. There's another group of offenses in Article 134 in which it appears that Congress not having set forth that specific offense elsewhere in the code, the President has suggested that these matters can be prosecuted in the military justice system in the same way they can be prosecuted in civilian society, adding on the elements of prejudicial to good order and discipline or service discrediting. If we're talking about the latter, why isn't it sufficient to have just one jurisdiction in civilian society have the particular offense that's at issue? Then why isn't it sufficient to have just one and say, well, it's no longer a purely military offense if there's some jurisdiction out there that prosecutes it?
Yeah, could you repeat the question?
Yeah.
Please respond yes or no.
Taking it, that's a fair point on a long question. Taking into account that there are a variety of offenses defined in Article 134's description in the manual, some of which can only be prosecuted in the military justice system, some of which can be prosecuted in civilian courts, accepting the service discrediting and prejudicial disorder elements. That is, we have those two categories. We have the category of matters that can be prosecuted in civilian society. If there is only one jurisdiction somewhere in the United States that prosecutes it, why isn't that existence of that one jurisdiction sufficient to take that offense out of the category of being a purely military offense?
Because it's not generally denounced.
But doesn't one negate purely? That's the question. If purity is defined as purity, no thing darkening it, why doesn't one exception disprove the rule? That's the essence of, I think, what the Chief Judge is asking.
That's a much better articulation of my lengthy question.
Yes, Your Honor. One offense in and of itself among 50 jurisdictions would not be enough to...
But purity is something without blemish. If one jurisdiction prosecutes it, then there's a blemish. It's no longer pure.
Yes, Your Honor, I see your point.
What's your response?
That it would take... I would say that it's still... Because... I see my time.
You definitely have time to answer that question. Or if you would prefer... If you'd prefer to address it on rebuttal, that would be sufficient.
Yes, sir. That's what I'd like, Your Honor.
We have that opportunity.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Counsel for the government.
May it please the court, I am Captain Naomi Porterfield, and I, along with Lieutenant Colonel Jeremy Weber, represent the United States in this matter. In light of this court's opinion in United States versus Conworth last year, appellant asserts that Article 134 cannot serve as the underlying offense in a charge of housebreaking. Now, as appellant discussed, his argument is twofold. One, that Article 134, because of its elements, cannot serve per se as the underlying offense in a housebreaking charge. But as an alternative argument, appellant focuses on the underlying conduct here and argues that indecent acts cannot serve as the underlying misconduct because private consensual acts are not generally denounced in the civilian jurisdictions. And subject to the court's questions, I'd like to focus on that alternative argument rather than first.
I'd just like to ask one question before you start. Is the government aware of why this exception is in the discussion?
Well, Your Honor, I was unable, despite significant research, to find an exact answer to that question. My best guess, if you will, would be in light of the housebreaking charge. The housebreaking charge seems to be something where the essence of it deals with the sanctity of the home, and it's very personal in nature. And so I think, and again, this is purely a guess, that given that it was more of a fair notice issue where something that's generally considered criminal under common law or amongst the states would be the intent that you would need to have or the specific intent that you would need to commit when committing the offense of housebreaking.
Well, the 1921 manual, when it adopted housebreaking, didn't have it in the article nor in the discussion. And then we find it appearing in the discussion in the 1928 manual. But they also note in there that this is not a common law offense. And I've just been perplexed as to why, and I can't...
Well, Your Honor, I would certainly agree and have the same perplexity, if you will. I'd be happy to brief that issue should the court request it. I just am not clear.
Counsel, are you aware of statutes the Congress looked at in 1949 with respect to the Uniform Code of Military Justice in developing the various offenses that are listed prior to Articles 133 and 134?
I'm not aware of the exact statutes, no, Your Honor, I'm not. However, given appellant's argument about
the last question on that, at least for me, is the government today asking us to hold that the President could not set forth persuasive guidance in the meaning of courts martial with respect to this offense?
No, Your Honor, the government
Thank
is
you.
Not asking. Turning back now to appellant's alternative argument, he focuses on what qualifies as generally denounced. And the government feels that one appellant misunderstands what generally denounced means. Even in citing the 1951 analysis and the discussion between exclusive and non-exclusive jurisdiction, where that specific language came from, what the analysis goes on to say, or what the analysis goes on to do, is identify specific offenses. And those offenses include AWOL, desertion, disrespect toward officers, and similar offenses of a military character. And that's in the Joint Appendix at 158. It's certainly reasonable to see how Article 133, conduct unbecoming, fits amongst those. That is, that they necessarily rely on military status in being criminal.
Do you agree, sorry to interrupt you, but do you agree with the general proposition that in interpreting the manual language, we focus on the act in question, you win, and if we focus on the elements, you lose?
Well, Your Honor, I would only caveat my response to that by saying, one, the elements test has not been applied in any other analysis of whether something constitutes a military offense. And secondly, and this is sort of getting into what Chief Judge Efron was saying earlier, this court has identified Article 133 as, or Article 134, as having two classes of conduct, those which are, you know, generally considered unlawful in common law or amongst the states, and those which are only unlawful because of their effect on military discipline or their tendency to discredit the service. And we would definitely submit that indecent acts with another is not one of those offenses.
Okay. If we buy your position and we let the civilianness of the underlying offense control, how are we ever going to have a workable test for this thing? Are we going to have to resort to rummaging through state law every time one of these comes up? I mean, you've provided in a recent submission a laundry list of state statutes. Is that what we're going to have to do if we buy the government's position? That strikes me as an extremely unworkable test, as well as making military jurisdiction to some extent hang on questions of state law, which I doubt that the framers of the UCMJ intended.
I certainly agree with you, Your Honor. And it was appellant, in fact, who provided that laundry list of states, trying to say that there was the necessity of finding one statute, or multiple statutes, I should say, that corresponded to this particular article in the UCMJ. The United States does not agree with that position. In fact, when the United States used the Minnesota statute in the lower court's pleadings, it did so as an example only. And the court's interpretation of the Minnesota statute is not dispositive to its analysis here. The workable test is already provided to us. When you look at the analysis of what constitutes a purely military offense, in talking about this, the drafters have told us, you know, have given us examples. AWOL, desertion, willful disobedience to officers. In March, the court talked about, you know, AWOL again. And these are things which...
Excuse me, why would they accept that sort of behavior from a housebreaking statute? How would someone unlawfully enter a residence with the intent to go AWOL?
Well, Your Honor, AWOL is one of...
With the intent to disobey a superior commissioned officer.
Again,
the intent to fraternize with a subordinate, with the intent to gamble with a subordinate.
Well, the intent to gamble with a subordinate or the intent to fraternize with the subordinate can take place even if the entry was unlawful. That could still be the specific intent to commit the crime. And again, I am not prepared to fully brief the reason for the creation of this particular policy. What I would say is that 133, for example, like this court discussed in Conlick, can be very subjective. And there are specific instances in 134 under the general article where because of the military impact, because of the tendency to discredit, or because of the prejudicial nature of the misconduct, anything, virtually anything, could be charged under 134. But that's not the case with this particular underlying offense of indecent acts with another. And so that would be my response. Here, with indecent acts, And the indecency that's in the actual statute is a pretty common definition. It doesn't require, or it doesn't talk specifically about private consensual acts. That was the court's interpretation of the definition of indecency, finding that sexual acts in the presence of another was open and notorious, sufficient to meet the elements of indecent acts with another. But the statute itself does not talk about the fact that it has to be in the presence of another person. The statute merely identifies indecent acts as the requirement as one of the elements for proving indecent acts with another.
So in what civilian jurisdiction could the acts that were charged and proved in this case, as far as the indecent act go, be prosecuted?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
In what civilian jurisdiction could these acts be prosecuted?
Well, Your Honor, I would say my answer to that question would be twofold. First, I would say that in Minnesota, these acts would be criminal. And then I would go on to say that the question really should not be whether there are a litany of civilian statutes that criminalize this particular conduct, but whether a civilian could be charged with this conduct. And that's really the essence of a purely military offense. A civilian, any of the civilian state codes could criminalize this conduct. And appellant confuses prosecutorial discretion and legislative discretion with what constitutes a purely military offense.
If an item has never been, in modern times, treated by a state or federal legislative body as a criminal offense, why would that then not be a purely military offense if it's only designated in the Uniform Code of Military Justice, either directly or through a 133 or 134 prosecution?
Well, Your Honor, I would again reiterate the concept of prosecutorial discretion here.
I'm not talking about prosecutorial discretion as to whether to prosecute a statute that's on the books. But if in modern times no legislative body has on its books a particular offense, how does that then become anything other than a purely military offense if it's prosecuted in the military justice system only?
Your Honor, the United States would argue that the fact that this particular conduct is criminalized in the military by the UCMJ. One, again, I would reiterate that it was this court's interpretation of the elements itself.
Can you please specify what conduct you're talking about before you answer the Chief Judge's question?
Yes, Your Honor. When I say this, the conduct at issue here, the digital penetration in the presence of another person.
Okay.
And
can you please indicate, in response to the Chief Judge's question, whether you are accepting the proposition embedded in the question that this is conduct that is nowhere legislated against?
Just to clarify, we'll answer both questions. My question was a generic question, not about this particular offense. But I think that's
right,
fine.
Yeah,
Let's get to your. Yeah, let's get to Judge Baker's question as to this specific act, and then you can answer my generic question, and that is, if you have an offense which is prosecuted only in the military justice system, not as a matter of prosecutorial discretion, but as a matter of legislative designation, what would make that not a purely military offense? But why don't you address Judge Baker's question first?
Which is a different question.
Yes.
You should be clear which question you're answering.
Certainly. And just to clarify, Judge Baker, can you reiterate your question?
Well, you can do his first, but just...
Answer Judge Baker's question first. Right, exactly. There are two separate questions, and I think it'd be good to address first the question that previously we've discussed and Judge Baker has reiterated, and that is, what is there about this particular act in this case?
Is sticking your finger in somebody else's private part in the presence of another criminalized under state law or not?
Yes, Your Honor.
And is it more than the state of Minnesota?
Your Honor, I am not... I do not have a litany of the statutes that criminalize the same conduct. What I would say is that there are a variety of statutes that define indecency in the same way that it is defined in the, under the UCMJ, and that it is that indecency that is criminalized in the UCMJ. So that, now, that's how I was referring to.
Now, in response to the Chief Judge, if no state criminalized a conduct, a form of conduct, and it was prosecuted in the military system, why would that not be a purely military offense?
Your Honor, I would argue that the reason it would not be a purely military offense is that purely military offense, as it's been identified in the case law and as it's been discussed in the analysis, does not turn on whether a, another state, even one state, prosecutes or criminalizes the same misconduct. Rather, it turns on the military character of the conduct. Even in Congress, the court discussed the link between the act and that military nexus that was required.
In terms of military character of the conduct, you don't disagree that if this person had been charged with the Article 134 offense of indecent acts with another, that one of the things that the government would have had to prove is that the conduct was either prejudicial to good order and discipline or service discrediting, do you?
Oh, certainly not, Your Honor.
So why is it, doesn't that make it a military offense?
Well, again, this is going back to Davis. When Davis talked about the two classes of conduct, it talked about Bryce as well, and saying that there's the class that talks about things that are unlawful, generally unlawful, where you can include that conduct in the specification and that would be sufficient. And then there's the other class that's only unlawful because of its tendency to discredit the service or because it's prejudicial to order and discipline. In those cases, there would be the requirement that you would have to put that language in the specification.
But you don't disagree that, at least today, you have to put that language in the specification for the specification to stand, do you?
In those cases, but not in this case.
But for an Article 134 offense, you don't disagree that you need to put that language in the specification and prove it.
Oh, no, Your Honor.
I can see the confusion. I mean, it's puzzling to say the least as to why kidnapping would require that the government prove that the conduct was prejudicial to good order and discipline or service discrediting, but that was not your choice nor mine.
Certainly. Your Honor, I guess just to clarify, the United States position here is that the existence of a state statute that prosecutes the same conduct as the UCMJ does, or that criminalizes the same conduct as the UCMJ does, is not required. What is required, and again, there is a difference between an element test and the nature of the conduct itself. The United States would agree with that. But in analyzing what constitutes a purely military offense, this court and the drafters have consistently looked at the nature of the offense and whether there is a military character. Even those listed by the appellant in his reply brief talk about or speak to the military character of the
conduct. Counsel, I believe you previously suggested that fraternization, for example, would be a purely military offense.
Yes, Your Honor.
Does that mean that a state would be disabled from developing a statute in which various public officials could be prosecuted for engaging in conduct in which superiors were interacting with subordinates in the same manner as fraternization in the military?
Well, in that sense, the statute, of course, would be very similar. This statute only applies to commissioned officers or warrant officers as it's set up in
There's no statute on fraternization. It's a provision that's discussed in Article 134. So my question is, and I think it reflects what Judge Stuckey asked, why should we have in each case a determination as to whether, as a matter of constitutional law, a state could make something a criminal offense, but instead, why don't we simply look at what states do and what the federal government does? That is this or is this not a criminal offense somewhere in civilian society? The theoretical possibility that a state or the federal government could make something criminal could lead us into a very speculative analysis of the due process rights of individuals in the criminal law setting.
Well, Your Honor, I think certainly the court is welcome to look at what the states look at, whether another state has this as a criminal offense. However, I don't know that it would be as onerous as Your Honor believes, when all you have to do is look at the military character of the conduct. Perusing through the UCMJ, it's fairly simple than looking at the specification itself, the plain language of the specification, as this court did in Conlon, and determining whether the essence of the offense is purely military. The essence of the Article 133 offense is purely military. The essence of an AWOL offense is purely military, and the list goes on and on. The essence of digital penetration in the presence of another person is not purely military. And so, while there certainly is, I guess, the theoretical possibility that we could hypothesize similar or analogous civilian statutes with some that are determined to be purely military, like fraternization, I think the essence question is really the focus here. And I see that my time is expired.
Are there other questions from the bench? If not, you may briefly conclude.
Certainly. The diverse nature of Article 134 precludes it from being per se prohibited as the underlying offense to a charge of housebreaking. But furthermore, the underlying conduct in appellant's case is not a purely military offense, in that it lacks the inherent military character consistently relied upon by this court in making such a determination. For these reasons, the United States respectfully requests that you affirm the lower court's decision.
Thank you, counsel. Does the defense have rebuttal?
Yes, sir. Your Honors, I'd like to get back to Judge Baker's question about a purely military offense. On page 168 of the Joint Appendix, on paragraph 12, in the legal and legislative analysis or the basis for the 1951 bail for courts marshals, there's discussion defining purely military offenses are meant those offenses which are not generally denounced by a civil system of justice. We take that definition and apply it to the question about whether one state might have on its books a statute that prohibits, say, that the underlying conduct at issue here, then that one state alone does not meet that requirement of a purely military offense in that case. The government has...
That's helpful, counsel, but are we obligated to apply the analysis that drafters of the manual for courts martial put together after the legislation was enacted?
No, Your Honor, it's just mere guidance. And in this particular case, the government cited only one statute in Minnesota, and they provided no case law that actually applied that statute to the conduct similar to what we have in this particular case, which is consensual sexual activity in the presence of a third party in a private setting, a dorm room. In fact, there might be states that have laws on the books that might be arcane or outdated. For instance, they may not take into effect Lawrence versus Texas, and there might be a due process or liberty interest at stake, which make the statute facially overly broad.
Counsel, I noticed that in your petition supplement, you'd focus on the issue of housebreaking. If we were to rule in your favor in this case, what would be the argument, if any, as to prejudice regarding sentence, given the actions that have been taken in this case to the original sentence and the reductions by the convening authority?
Housebreaking itself is a 5 years maximum sentence for confinement. The client was given 5 months. If you compare him with the companion case of Munson, who was convicted of indecent acts, he got 15 days, and he was also convicted of adultery as well as conspiracy. He had 15 days, no punitive discharge, and a reduction to E3. So it shows that housebreaking is significant. He was acquitted of housebreaking, so housebreaking is significant in this case. So I think there is a basis that shows the prejudice for this one offense. Moreover, there's evidence that the lesser-included defense of unlawful entry is legally insufficient. There's a statement from Erin Swigert, which she initially testified to on page 64 of the Joint Appendix, that she stated, I don't think I minded them being in my room. She later changed that testimony. There's also evidence of a reasonable mistake of fact defense, considering the consensual activities that occurred between the appellant and Airman Swieger that evening in question, and her conduct in allowing the appellant, once she awoke, to kiss him, and their discussion and the activities that occurred later on, that he would reasonably believe that he had permission to be in the room. There was no indication otherwise when she and him interacted initially, the second entry. And plus, there's a comment, I asked for a boy, not a man. This shows that at least the appellant would have expected he had permission to return. So therefore, we ask this court to not affirm the lesser-included offense of unlawful entry. And, Your Honor, I'd also like to add that the government made a comment that the court never used an elements test. Well, in fact, in the Marsh case, the court did apply what I would call a de facto elements case. In that case, the court looked at the application of whether the actual language in the statute. I think that's a good place for us to look at when we look at the 134 offense in question here, and determine that because the statute required that the individual be a member of the armed forces, that was inherently a purely military offense. Although it's not the same exact language that we have here, there are unique military elements in the Article 134 offense in this case. In addition, it seems illogical for the appellant to be prosecuted and sentenced for a housebreaking offense where the underlying offense concerns consensual activity and the gravamen of the impact is particularly on the good order and discipline of the military and services crediting. I'd like to add that we ask this court, because the underlying offense in this case is a purely military offense under the elements test, as well as because generally civilian jurisdictions appears from the evidence not to prosecute this particular underlying act, that this court set aside the housebreaking and not affirm the lesser included offense.
Thank you, counsel. I did ask counsel a question in rebuttal that I had not asked on direct, and so we have your brief, but if you'd like to address the issue of prejudice there briefly, you can do so now, or we can take your brief on that.
Yes, Your Honor. Can I say you just stand on your
brief? Thank you. The case is now submitted. We thank counsel for both parties for your presentation today, and the court will stand in recess.